This item is exactly like the Slaver disintegrator digging tool, except that one beam suppresses the positive charge on the proton. One should be careful not to use both beams at once, as the beams are parallel and separate.
I understand, said the Kazin. If the twin beams were allowed to fall next to each other, there would be current flow.
Exactly.
Do you believe these makeshifts will be adequate? There's no guessing what we shall meet.
That's not quite true, said Louis Wu. This isn't a planet after all. If there was an animal the Ringworlders didn't like, chances are they left it home. We won't meet any tigers or mosquitoes.
Suppose the Ringworlders like tigers, Teela wondered.
It was a valid point, despite its facetious sound. What did they know of Ringworld physiology? Only that they came from a water world using approximately G2 starlight. On that basis, they might look like humans, puppeteers, Kazinti, grogs, dolphins, killer whales, or sperm whales. But they probably wouldn't.
We will fear the Ringworlders more than their pets, Speaker predicted. We must take all possible weapons. I recommend that I be placed in charge of this expedition until such time as we may leave the ring.
I have the TASP.
I have not forgotten that, Nessus. You may think of the TASP as an absolute veto power. I suggest that you show reluctance to use it. Think, all of you.
The Kazin loomed over them, 500 pounds of teeth and claws and orange fur.
We are all supposed to be sentient. Think of our situation. We have been attacked. Our ship is half destroyed. We must travel an unknown distance across unknown territory. The powers of the Ringworlders were once enormous. Are they still enormous? Or do they now use nothing more complex than a spear made from a sharpened bone? They might equally well have transmutation, total conversion beams, anything that may have been required to build this.
The Kazin looked around him, at the glassy floor and the black lava walls, and perhaps he shuddered.
This incredible artifact.
I have the TASP, said Nessus. The expedition is mine.
Are you pleased with its success? I mean no insult, I intend no challenge. You must place me in command. Of the four of us, I alone have had training in war.
Let's wait, Teela suggested. We may not find anything to fight.
Agreed, said Louis.
He didn't fancy being led by a Kazin.
Very well, but we must take the weapons.
They began to load the fly cycles.
There was other equipment besides weaponry. Camping equipment, food testing and food rebuilding kits, files of dietary additives, lightweight air filters. There were communicator discs designed to be worn on a human or Kazinti wrist or a puppeteer neck. They were bulky and not particularly comfortable.
Why these? Louis asked.
For the puppeteer had already shown them the intercom system built into the fly cycles.
They were originally intended to communicate with the Liar's autopilot so that we might summon the ship when necessary.
Then why do we need them now?
As translators, Louis. Should we run into sentient beings, as seems likely, we will need the autopilot to translate for us.
Oh. They were finished. Equipment still rested beneath the Liar's hull, but it was useless stuff. Free-fall equipment for deep space, the pressure suits, some replacement parts for machinery vaporized by the Ringworld defense system. They had loaded even the air filters, more because they were no more bulky than handkerchiefs than because they were likely to be needed. Louis was bone-tired. He mounted his fly cycle and looked about him, wondering if he had forgotten anything. He saw Teela staring straight upward, and even through the mist of exhaustion he saw that she was horrified.
"There ain't no justice," she swore. "It's still noon."
"Don't panic. Louis, we've been working for a good 6 hours. I know we have. How could it still be noon?"
"Don't worry about it. The sun doesn't set, remember?"
"Doesn't set?"
Her hysteria ended as suddenly as it had begun.
"Oh, of course it doesn't set."
"We'll have to get used to it. Look again.
Isn't that the edge of a shadow square against the sun?" Something had certainly nipped a cord out of the sun's disk. The sun diminished as they watched.
"We had best take flight," said Speaker.
When darkness falls, we should be aloft.
Chapter 11. The Arch of Heaven. 4 fly cycles rose in a diamond cluster through waning daylight. The exposed ring flooring dropped away. Nessus had shown them how to use the slave circuits. Now each of the other cycles was programmed to imitate whatever Louis did. Louis was steering for the mall. In a contoured seat like a masseur couch, without the masseur attachments, he guided his cycle with pedals and a joystick. 4 transparent miniature heads hovered like hallucinations above his dashboard. These included a lovely raven-haired siren, a ferocious quasi-tiger with eyes that were too aware, and a pair of silly-looking one-eyed pythons. The intercom hookup was working perfectly, with results comparable to delirium tremens. As the fly cycles rose above the black lava slopes, Louis watched the others for their expressions. Teela reacted first. Her eyes scanned the middle distance and rose and found infinity where they had always before found limits. They went big and round, and Teela's face lit like sunlight breaking through storm clouds.
"Oh, Louis!"
"What an extraordinarily large mountain," Speaker said.
Nessus said nothing. His heads bobbed and circled nervously. Darkness fell quickly. A black shadow swept suddenly across the giant mountain. In seconds, it was gone. The sun was only a golden sliver now, cut by blackness, and something took shape in the darkening sky. An enormous arch. Its outline grew rapidly clear. As the land and sky grew dark, the true glory of the Ringworld sky emerged against the night. The Ringworld arched over itself in stripes of baby blue swirled with white cloud, in narrower stripes of near black. At its base, the arch was very broad. It narrowed swiftly as it rose. Near the zenith, it was no more than a broken line of glowing blue-white. At the zenith itself, the arch was cut by the otherwise invisible ring of shadow squares. The sky cycles rose quickly, but in silence. The sonic fold was a most effective insulator. Louis heard no wind song from outside. He was all the more startled when his private bubble of space was violated by a scream of orchestral music. It sounded as though a steam organ had exploded. The sound was painfully loud. Louis slapped his hands over his ears. Stunned, he did not at once realize what was happening. Then he flicked the intercom control and Nessus's image went like a ghost at dawn. The scream, a church choir being burnt alive, diminished considerably. He could still hear it keening at second hand, a gutshot stereo set, through speakers in Teela's intercom.
"Why did he do that?" Teela exclaimed in astonishment.
"Terrified. It'll take him a while to get used to it."
"Used to what?"
"I take command," Speaker to Animals boomed. "The herbivore is incapable to make decisions. I declare this mission to be of military nature, and I take command."
For a moment, Louis considered the only alternative, claiming the leader's place for himself. But who wanted to fight a Kazin? In any case, the Kazin would probably make a better leader. By now, the fly cycles were half a mile up. Sky and land were mostly black, but on the black land were blacker shadows, giving form, if not color, to the map. And the sky was sprinkled with stars and mastered by that ego-smashing arch.
Oddly, Louis found himself thinking of Dante's Divine Comedy. Dante's universe had been a complex artifact, with the souls of men and angels shown as precisely machined parts of the vast structure. The Ringworld was obtrusively an artifact, a made thing. You couldn't forget it, not for an instant. For the handle rose overhead, huge and blue and checkered, from beyond the edge of infinity. Small wonder Nessus had been unable to face it. He was too afraid, and too realistic. Perhaps he saw the beauty, perhaps not. Certainly he saw that they were marooned on an artificial structure bigger in area than all the worlds of the former puppeteer empire.
"I believe I can see the rim walls," said Speaker.
Louis tore his eyes away from the arching sky. He looked to port and starboard, and his heart sank. To the left, They were facing back along the gouge of the Liar's Landing so that left was port. The edge of the rim wall was a barely visible line, blue-black on blue-black. Louis could not guess its height. Its base was not even hinted. Only the top edge showed, and when he stared at it, it disappeared. That line was about where the horizon might have been, so that it might as easily have been the base as the top of something.